Hey everyone, welcome back to the Percy Jackson Poseidon podcast. This is going to be the part one review of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Last Olympian. So this is the fifth book in the series. It wraps everything up, concludes the whole story. So let's get into my thoughts about the book. So unlike the previous books, where I remembered some stuff, at least, but I did not remember anything about this book, like, at all. I didn't remember, all that I knew is that, they win in the end, and there's a battle at New York. That was it. I didn't remember any details. So this whole book was just, like, a real big surprise for me. You know, it made it really interesting in reading this, because I just didn't know what to expect. So the book opens up a year after the ending of the last book, which I found kind of interesting, because, we didn't get to see Percy's summertime at camp. Like, most of the books, like, open up with, him starting summer at camp. And so we kind of change it up with this one. It's really kind of towards the end. Because the last book ended with his 15th birthday. And in this book, we start a week away from his 16th birthday. So it's been a whole year. So I found that kind of just a little different, interesting take. And I kind of wish we would have maybe got a little more caught up with Percy and what he went on in the last year. It feels like we kind of just speeding through his age. We're just aging him up so rapidly throughout these books, and I feel like Percy went from 12 to 16 like overnight in these books, like so quickly. But we learn that he's been spending a lot of time with Rachel Elizabeth Dare, which I thought was really cool, continuing on their connection that they made in the last book. And, we get a kind of a cute scene where Rachel, sort of asks Percy to kiss her, which I thought was, really cute. And it's definitely, we definitely feel like these are definitely teenagers who like each other, but have no idea, like, what to do with their feelings, especially Percy, since he likes Rachel and he likes Annabeth. So I definitely feel it's like a realistic portrayal of, like, teenage boys and girls and how they interact, figuring out their emotions and stuff and their attraction for one another. And I like that Rachel's a little bit more bold in asserting herself, wanting Percy to kiss her. So that was cute. And then Blackjack, the Pegasus, interrupts them with Beckendorf on his back. Beckendorf was sort of a minor character, I believe, from the Hephaestus cabin. And so he tells Percy it's time, and we don't really know what that means, but we find out that, it's time to sort of start the assault on Kronos. And so before he leaves, Rachel gives Percy a kiss. Again, very cute between them. I really like the Rachel Elizabeth Dare character in these books. So then Percy and Beckendorf go off to the Princess Andromeda ship to try and stop Kronos. That's now in Luke's body. And Beckendorf plants explosives all over the ship. But Percy, while Percy distracts the monsters, but then, they get captured by Kronos. And so, in order to defeat them, Beckendorf sacrifices himself and blows up the ship, while Percy then sinks to, like, the bottom of the ocean. And he's rescued by Tyson and taken to Poseidon's kingdom. And so we get to see Poseidon in his underwater world, kind of, like, for the first time. And we meet Percy's, like, half-brother, I guess, like, Poseidon's, like, son with his actual wife. And so that's kind of a cool little scene, and we find out that he's been fighting this war against these ancient sea monsters under the water, and that's why he hasn't been helping out the gods on land. And we briefly meet Poseidon's wife and his son Triton. And Percy wants to help Poseidon fight in the war, but he tells Percy that he has to return home to camp, so he sends Percy off. And then Percy at camp, has to deliver the bad news about Beckendorf and how he died blowing up the ship. And apparently, Beckendorf and Selena Beauregard, daughter of Aphrodite, they were apparently dating. And so, she's obviously very sad, and Clarice actually has to kind of console her. And which is a nice moment for Clarice, again, sort of adding to, we're breaking down the wall of her demeanor, of her being so hard all the time. We've been learning that she does have a soft side. And so, Percy and Annabeth then retrieve the prophecy from the attic, the one about the child of the big three. So we finally get the reveal of what that prophecy has been, which is sort of, what this whole series has been about, which, kicked off Percy being the son of Poseidon because of this prophecy. So the prophecy, Percy reads the prophecy to the War Council, which the War Council is made up of Chiron and the leaders of each of the cabins. And so the prophecy reads, "A half-blood of the eldest gods shall reach 16 against all odds. and see the world in endless sleep, the hero's soul cursed blade shall reap. A single choice shall end his days, Olympus to preserve or raise. And raise not as in like to rise up, but raise as in to like destroy. So then Chiron tells the council, he shows the council an Iris message of the Titan Typhon. And he's been making his way through Mount Olympus, destroying everything, and the gods are fighting it. And so, obviously, you know, they need to do something, you know, because the Titans are, or the gods are distracted by the Titan Typhon. And Cronus is going to attack Olympus unguarded. So then Percy has a dream of Rachel and her art. And she's been, you know, painting sort of things that she sees that she could not have seen any other way, like sight. You know, so, you know, she paints a picture of a young Luke. Obviously, she never met Luke, or doesn't really know Luke. And then, you know, she paints a picture of Olympus surrounded by lightning. And so she has these, like, prophetic sort of, you know, visions and stuff, and she's been painting them. And so then the next day, Percy finds Mrs. O'Leary and follows her into the forest, where they find Juniper, Nico, and Linnaeus, one of the elder satyrs. And they were talking about Grover, who has been apparently lost for months now, and Percy kind of forcibly has to persuade Linnaeus to help find Grover, and then he ends up talking to Nico, and Nico tells them they need to visit Luke's mom. So then we go to Luke's mom's house, and we meet her, and she clearly has, you know, has kind of lost her mind a little bit, and she thinks Percy and Nico are both Luke, but we do learn that Luke came to visit her and needed her blessing just before he had to host Cronus' body. So after seeing Luke's mom, they return to Mrs. O'Leary and they find Hestia, the goddess of the hearth, who offers them dinner and talks to them. And Hestia tells Percy that she is the last Olympian because she is the goddess of the home. So while the other gods are fighting Typhon, she stays behind. And I'm not really sure why the book would be titled The Last Olympian if it's after Hestia. Like, why is that an important aspect of the book? Maybe I'm missing something, so I'm not 100% clear on that. But then Percy and Nico then go to see Percy's mom, Sally, and his new stepdad, Paul Blofus, who now knows about Percy and his demigod life. And, you know, Percy needs Sally's blessing in order for him to continue with Nico's plan, which is bathe in the River Styx. And so, we assume, so Percy gets his blessing from his mom, and then he and Nico go to Central Park with Mrs. O'Leary the Hellhound to find an opening to the, a secret opening to the underworld. So, but they end up running into Grover, because Percy needs Grover's help, and he ends up finding Grover asleep in the park, and we find out that Grover was put asleep by Morpheus, the god of dreams. And that's why he's been missing for so long. And so Grover then helps them open up the gate to the underworld. Then Percy, Nico, and Miss O'Leary go in. And then Nico tricks Percy into going to meet Hades, because Nico was told to deliver Percy to Hades in order for information about his mother and his past. Percy feels betrayed, but Nico, you know, claims he was told Percy would never get hurt. So this is the, I believe, second time we've met Hades. We met him in the first book, you know, and we meet, again, his wife, Persephone, and her mother, Demeter. And I like this sort of portrayal of Hades, and it's good seeing him return again in this book. And Hades then tells Nico his mother's name, I believe Maria. And then Hades explains why he had to put Nico and Bianca in the Lotus Hotel, which was to protect them, because it was during World War II. And we find out that the Fury Electo was disguised as the lawyer that had got them out. So because Hades wanted one of his children to be the child in the prophecy instead of Percy, that's why he brought them out of the Lotus Hotel. But he put them in because he was trying to protect them. And then Hades sends Nico away and he captures Percy. But then Nico rescues Percy and they go to the River Styx. And Percy bathes in the River Styx, where the ghost of Achilles warns him. And we learn that Luke also bathes in the River Styx because that's how he was able to host the body of Cronus. So Percy bathes in the river. He almost drowns because of the pain, but a vision of Annabeth is what saves him. And he comes out nearly invincible except for a weak spot, his sort of Achilles heel, which is the small of his back. and he ends up fighting off. They fight off Hades' minions, leaves Nico behind, and he then tries to, which Nico tries to convince Hades to kind of join the fight against the Olympians. Percy then heads to the Empire State Building and tells Annabeth to gather the campers and meet him there. So they go to Olympus and meet Hestia again, who is the last Olympian because she's the one that stayed behind to, you know, tend the, you know, the hearth. And then they meet Hermes, and Hermes talks to Percy and Annabeth and delivers a message from Athena telling him to remember the rivers and to stay away from Annabeth. So I kind of like that, you know, Athena is always, like, weary of, you know, she doesn't think Percy's good enough for her daughter, and he's a troublemaker. So I kind of like that. That's always, like, kind of her thing. It's like, Percy, stay away from Annabeth. Very motherly, I think. It's kind of a interesting point. But then Percy, Annabeth, and the campers head into Manhattan. They notice that Morpheus has put the entire city to sleep. And then Percy then assigns, you know, groups of campers to protect various entrance points into Manhattan. And then we get Talia and the Hunters of Artemis. They come in and they start to join to help out. And it's nice to see Talia again. I wish we got more from her. She doesn't really do much here, but it's still nice to be remembered of her. So Annabeth then activates statues throughout the city that Daedalus had installed as an army, and so they're actually automatons, so they're helping to fight as well. And then so Percy then jumps into the Hudson River, just like Athena said, mind the rivers, and so he uses the sand dollar that Poseidon gave him at the end of the last book to convince the river gods to stop Cronus' ships from entering Manhattan. So that's kind of also a nice little payoff of what the sand dollar was for that Poseidon had given them, so that was cool. And then Percy and Annabeth then help Apollo. Apollo comes back. Percy and Annabeth then help the Apollo campers on the Williamsburg Bridge and manage to drive Cronus' army back across the bridge. This would all make a lot more sense if I knew any of these locations and their geography relative to each other in New York. I've been to New York a couple times, but I don't really know where any of these bridges are and where they're located in relation to the Empire State Building and all that, so it kind of just becomes mumbled locations in my mind. But so in the fight, Annabeth then blocks a stab from Ethan Nakamura that was meant for Percy, and he would have hit him in Percy's weak spot on the small of his back. That's why Annabeth jumped in to save him. So Annabeth gets hurt. Percy then uses Riptide to break the bridge. And Cronus then retreats, and the campers, hunters regroup and settle down for the night in their new headquarters. And so that's kind of where we're going to leave off here. But, I like the beginning of this book a lot, you know, catching up with Rachel and jumping into the action. And I also like getting to know more from Nico, who he might be 12 or 13 at this point. I'm not 100% sure, but you can tell he's definitely matured from that 10-year-old kid playing Mythomagic games in, you know, the third book. So I like what we get with Nico here. I also like meeting Luke's mom because it gives us an understanding of Luke's childhood and why he ran away. Although I feel like maybe we should have gotten this information like a book or two ago. I think it's a little late, but that's okay. At least we're getting it now. You know, and I don't really remember how the book ends, so we'll see how the rest of this battle plays out. Again, all this, you know, everything going on in New York, I'm not really, the geography, you know, is like, throws me off. I don't know where anybody is. But, you know, it's nice to see the return of Thalia. I do wish we got more of her. And so, yeah. So, I like the beginning of this book. I like everything we get with Nico. And so, yeah. So, that's it for this episode review of the podcast. The first half of the book, Percy Jackson and Olympians, The Last Olympian. Again, I don't know why it's called The Last Olympian, because Hestia is considered the last Olympian, but she doesn't really play a big part in this book, so why is it titled after her? I'm not 100% sure. So, but anyway, that's it for this episode. Thank you all for listening to the Percy Jackson of Poseidon podcast, and stay tuned to the next episode where we'll review the second half of the book, and in the third part, we'll review the book as a whole. So thank you all for listening, and until next time, we'll see you all later. Bye.